Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Hey! Nope, hated it.
No, no, no. Leave it all. Leave it in.
Welcome to the worst year ever. Am I right? Am I right? Isn't it bad?
Yeah, it's not great.
I think we just lost a lot of listeners.
It's not the best year ever, which is what this podcast would be called if this year wasn't terrible. You know what the best year ever podcast would be? Is like, I feel like 1993, maybe.
I was going to say one of the mid-90s. Yeah.
Simpsons was really coming, like just hit after hit. Whatever year the monorail episode came out, that's got to be the best year ever.
That was
the peak of human... everybody sort of pretending like everything's fine.
RIP our mentions. Everyone's going to tell us
everything was fine,
Hill?
Cody.
93.
Phil Hartman was still on The Simpsons, so
that's true.
We had no problems. He's
still alive.
As a species. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not this year. The year is 2021.
And there is no
Phil
Hartman
left. It is not 2020, but it's just as bad, and there is no Phil Hartman left. And today we have a hodgepodge news smorgasbord for your earballs and cones.
Yes. Suck it up, slurp it down, just guzzle this hot, thirsty load of news. As it burbles down your throat, maybe gets backed up into your nose a little bit.
Yeah, regurgitate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're one pumping news into your cream.
And then spit it into your baby bird's mouths.
Baby
should we
bird
start
the
off...
news to your... Ch- okay.
Yeah. Is this not the whole show? Are we not...
No, this is not.
We're just kidding.
That's it. Let's start off light. There's never anything light. COVID? We'll start off by talking about COVID. And
lightly.
This new
We're going to lightly talk about it.
Variant.
Yeah, the new variant, which I've
the
just
Delta.
Heard confirmed is up here in Oregon now.
It's everywhere. I think it's in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
it's
I mean,
dominant
it's everywhere. It's
a strain
like.
In a lot of places.
How do they decide the names of these things? How do they decide it's Delta? Because I feel like that's just bad PR for the airline. Like, what's the. Like, what's
I think
yeah.
this has nothing to do with. The American
if you
airline
were going,
variant.
If you were going to name a deadly plague variant after an airline, you would go with Spirit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
like,
you would
yeah
think,
the Spirit variant is tearing through the American Southeast.
Or like
yeah,
Virgin
that's what I would do.
Atlantic.
Yeah, the Virgin variant.
The Virgin variant. Yeah. Nobody wants to catch that.
just walking
yeah, these days.
Sorry, I got the Branson. I'm coughing real bad.
Start naming them the Gates and the Bezos.
That is true. Maybe there was a better branding for the coronavirus that would have made people more wary of.
I mean, it hurts. It
hurts yeah.
Corona beer.
Did you say
it hurt
more
Corona
wary
beer?
Of dirty martinis. What did you say?
I believe skirting health mandates and things like
sure,
that.
Sure. Yeah. Instead of
instead
COVID,
of whatever it is you just said that
it
I
could. Yeah. I don't know. I got nothing. The main thing I want to start off by saying is that if you're vaccinated, you've got very good protection against it. That hasn't changed, as far as they can tell.
Yeah, anyway. That seems still true.
Yeah.
And so, but there's a real risk, of course, as always, to those of us who have chosen to remain unvaccinated.
Did you see the stat?
Which is
Did you see
about
the stat?
Half
yeah.
the country. We're at about 48%. people vaccinated at this point.
Yeah.
And
it's almost the same as Biden's new approval rating.
Yeah, almost. Is that really his new approval rating?
Well, you know, shit fluctuates all the time. Like it's not, but yes, the most, well, one of the most recent. So the one
no
of
one,
the new, because yeah. like there's a bunch of different ones. One was down, like he's dropped points among Democrats and risen like 8 points among Republicans. Which is bizarre, but he's overall down
what
a
he
little
wants.
Bit, according to that one poll. We should probably, maybe we can do this next week, we should probably do a comprehensive look at how he's doing in the polls and what Americans, because like We get in this space. None of us are fans of Joe Biden. Some of us actively despise him. Most of us actively despise him. I don't know. We're not wild about the administration, but I do think it's important from time to time to take like a step back and be like, okay, how is the country actually reacting to his plans? Like, what's popular?
Absolutely.
What's unpopular? Right. What do people like? Yeah. We'll need to do that.
Prepare for the day that we are eventually out of our cubes and able to talk to people in person. But yeah, I agree with you.
Get off the timeline.
There was a recent poll that showed him down quite a bit, which isn't super weird. You know, it's what happens with presidents, right? You know, you have your kind of honeymoon period, which Trump didn't get, and that was weird. Biden did. He was pretty popular for a while, and now, you know, not abnormal, it doesn't look, but yeah.
I mean, we're 6 months in, 5 months in his presidency.
Yeah. He's not benefiting from the whole, thank God Trump is out anymore, really, you know?
Yeah. Just in general, these variants are something for us to be aware of and wary of, but not to act in fear, I guess, is my... What do we have to say about this?
I think that's fair. I think that it's... Again, like you said, if you're vaccinated, that's good. Continue to be vaccinated.
Take more vaccines. Steal as many vaccines from whatever hospital is near you. You know, you want to get a car with a big metal front grill and just drive it through the side and heist as many of that. And then drink all of them as fast as you can.
Pretend the building is like a group of protesters and just plow through it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's no harm in quadrupling up.
Well, you know.
I mean.
You know, it doesn't matter which vaccine or what it's for. It doesn't need to be a COVID vaccine. Mm-hmm.
Get your smallpox.
Any vaccine will help.
Just drink straight smallpox. It works the same.
Mm-hmm. That's
break into a level 3 biohazard lab and just drink anything you find. It'll make you stronger.
Mm-hmm. But I guess seriously. It's something to be concerned about because it is a stronger variant, is worse, and people, even today, there's a big uptick in COVID, particularly in the South, where a lot of people are not getting vaccinated.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, what do we have here? Alabama, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Wyoming have fully vaccinated less than 35% of residents, and that is definitely what we're going to start seeing the surges at this point in the communities. I mean, of course.
Yeah, of course. And like, you know, I remember just a few weeks ago when Texas had 0 deaths one day. And that was, there was like a 36-hour news cycle where every like Texas official and people in the media were like, they did it. Look, see? It was good to open up and so on. But obviously, like, the next day there were deaths.
Yeah.
That's not how this works. It's not, it's 0 today. We're done.
And it changes quickly. I mean, this is from CNN. The Delta variant made up about 10% of cases that were tested 3 or 4 weeks ago. As of last week, it appeared to be 90%. So that's how things change. Oof. We know. We lived through the last year and a half. But, you know, this is the only way that we were going to vanquish COVID was by getting everybody on the same page, which, you know, I guess wasn't going to happen, but it's not happening.
We can't
get
everybody on the same page about whether or not murdering unarmed people is bad.
Yeah.
there's no.
We're definitely not getting a
consensus on literally anything. Pardon me.
Yeah. With the exception of whether or not pot should be legal, which is why it's so baffling no one's
should
done
we,
that yet. But anyway.
Should
but,
we have named it like the demo virus or the democratic something? No, that's
the
bad.
Antifa virus. That would have gotten taken it seriously.
Whatever it is. Yeah. Like, we should have named it
The commie virus. The critical race theory virus.
We need to get vaccinated against the socialist virus. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe something like that would be better.
Commie virus. Yeah. That wouldn't have worked because they'd think like, oh, I don't even know. Nothing would happen.
No.
So I think the real point is get vaccinated if you can.
Get vaccinated if you can.
You know what? I'm going to add to that. Get vaccinated if you can.
Yeah.
You know what?
What?
Get vaccinated if you can.
Okay, if you can. Should we talk about something else?
So I on the subject of vaccines, I did want to bring this up. This was from, I believe, late last week or a few days ago. Palestinians canceled this this deal, this vaccine swap they had put together with Israel, where they would basically, Israel would give them a bunch of vaccines now, and then later in the year, Palestine would give Israel, I believe it was the equivalent number of vaccines, or a very similar number. And it was, this whole story was sort of framed as like, look, thank God, Palestinians hate Jews so much that they don't want their vaccines. And obviously, equating Jewish people with Israel is not the best thing to do. And it's not because they hate Israel. It's because the vaccines were expired.
Yeah.
They expired that month. They were, the deal was basically saying that they would, the vaccines would expire in July or August. And they expired in June. And that means they're not as strong.
They're worthless. Or maybe not worthless, but it's not.
Not, they're not like worthless, but they're definitely not as effective. And they're still like, they're still doing studies on the effectiveness of
expired
vaccines.
Yeah, and there's potentially the problem that if it's a lot less effective, you get these people and they think they're vaccinated and they stop taking precautions. And yeah, there's a lot of reasons to be concerned. It's not a, they're so racist they won't take Israeli vaccines.
Yeah. The framing of that, it's just been very wild, and reading like, oh, they're expired. Well, that makes sense. And I just saw a lot of people even point out like, well, if it's expired in June, that means they can still use it. Like they've got a couple weeks to still use it. I don't know if anybody else knows this, but the Pfizer vaccine, you take a dose and then you take a second dose 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
It's not even like, oh, they got a bunch of one dose Johnson and Johnsons. They're gonna have to work hard to get them out in time, but they can still do it. Which also is like unreasonable.
Do
if you
know
knew
when
they
made this deal?
Expired. This was earlier this year. I do not know.
It's just ridiculous to me, as if the Israeli government didn't know that their vaccines that they were going to give away expired in June. You know?
Yeah, of course.
Or if they did, what?
And then it can be framed as, you know, they're, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, yeah, just give them non-expired vaccines.
Yeah.
They did vaccinate about 100,000 Palestinian day workers in Israel earlier, so that was nice.
Israel did?
Yeah, it's nice of the occupying force to do that.
Mm-hmm. So kind of benevolent.
The population they're occupying. Anyway, that was just a thing on my radar, and it was
and
a
blip. You know
what?
This was the appropriate time to bring it up as
thank
we talked
goodness,
about
goodness.
COVID before we moved on to other things. So I just want to commend you for piping up.
Thank you so much. We wanted to start light, so we started with COVID. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple of nice things that have happened recently, law-wise. The Supreme Court just ruled on a case involving the NCAA, which is like student athletes, and they're called student athletes because if you call them student athletes, you don't have to pay them, and you can also make them ineligible to receive certain kinds of like scholarships and compensation and whatnot. Like, there's a bunch of ways you can fuck them over if they're student athletes, and you can also make millions of dollars off of them, and they don't get any real compensation other than, you know, some of them get free educations or whatnot. But they don't get money, and they often damage their brains and bodies playing, for example, football, a sport which kills you. So this is bad, and there was a case in the Supreme Court that was relating on like whether or not the NCAA was violating antitrust law by placing limits on education-related benefits that schools can provide to athletes. And they basically ruled the NCAA was being a motherfucker. And now schools are opened to provide their athletes with a lot more compensation as long as it's connected in some way to their education. Just as Brett Kavanaugh, not a
cool
dude.
Do you know what that entails?
What do you mean?
Like, what kind of compensation as related? Because a lot of them do get full ride scholarships and, you know, lodging
meals
and
it's more
all of that, which is like, you know, significant amount, but it's different.
Yeah, It's more that right now NCAA rules restrict any kind of compensation, including direct payment, for what they're doing, you know, as athletes. And particularly the big deal is the restrictions on direct payments. Because these people are making the schools millions of dollars. And the decision that Gorsuch offered basically said, hey, you can't do that. You are actually violating antitrust law by saying schools cannot pay their athletes directly. Basically, I mean, the exact wording of his decision, which is pretty good, I think, is the NCAA is not above the law. The NCAA couches its arguments for not paying student athletes in innocuous labels, but the labels cannot disguise the reality. The NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America. Basically, the core of the issue is these kids are playing sports at a near professional level, and it is a multi-million dollar industry. And the NCAA says you cannot pay the people who make that industry possible, and that would be illegal in any other business. The NCAA's argument up until now was, well, they're students, and so they're getting like a scholarship, so we don't like we not only do we not have to pay them, we are making it so that you cannot pay them. Our rules make you're not allowed to pay these athletes,
right.
And the decision is saying like, no, you can't fucking do that, which is potentially a huge deal, and has. We don't entirely know how all this is going to shake out. I'm sure there's going to be further cases on different aspects of this, but like,
yeah,
this has the potential to blow up the whole system.
Yeah, and look, I think I have a lot to learn about it, and I want to. I was starting to dig into this a little bit before, and on the face, it's like, yeah, you know, these schools are making a lot of money off of these athletes, and you know, they should be paid. But the flip side of what I'm seeing, and I'm sure I'll get some pushback from people. Again, I'm learning and trying to educate myself about all of this. And like you said, there'll be more stuff that unfolds, is how that affects college admissions, resources and recruitment. And if money gets spent on getting the best athletes, how does that affect other programs, women's athletes, women's sports programs, tying up funding and having the focus be all on the male, you know, teams that bring in more income. So there are some things in here that I am curious to learn more about. But also, you know, I understand. I see the benefits.
To me, the issue is like, I don't care about sports. I've never watched college sports. I don't like them. But it's a pretty egregious issue, especially considering like the biggest part to me is that like, yeah, often their education is paid for, but these kids are taking on permanent injuries, and they are making
a lot of them. Yeah.
A small group of people multimillionaires, and they aren't being compensated.
And a lot of particularly... them leave college, not you know. I think it's
most of them don't.
1% of athletes
go pro?
Do not go on to become professional players.
Yeah.
And so they're leaving with
permanent injuries, continuous medical bills.
And let's not pretend like even if they're getting a full ride scholarship, a lot of these institutions are having people there to focus on sports. So the education isn't necessarily the most important part of being at college. So it's not like you're leaving like with a whole set of skills outside of, let's say, basketball. You know?
Yeah, it's one of those things as far as, you know, the injustices we talk about a lot of the time where it's like, you know, problems of climate change, of like restrictions on immigration, all these like really massive and systemically brutal issues. It is a smaller fry issue than that. But it's horribly unethical the way that student athletes have been treated for decades by the NCAA. And this is like a pretty good decision, it seems.
Most
schools
that's
nice.
Didn't feed any of the athletes unless they were in season.
What?
Until a few years ago.
It's ridiculous.
They didn't get in.
They have all sorts of dumb limitations. Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, I think it's good. I am concerned about the effects of this on other sports programs and what happens. But I think good.
Pay people. Everything. Pay everybody everything.
And speaking of that,
yeah,
why don't you shell out some of those shillings to these sponsors?
Here are ads for ears.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
motherfuckers.
Shall we talk
about sons of bitches?
Domestic terrorism. Robert, you pitched this idea.
I love domestic terrorism. Yeah. So I'm a huge domestic, you know, terrorism stan.
Pack it.
Yeah, basically. So if you remember, what, 5 months ago when those people tried to overthrow the government by attacking the Capitol in a mob, it was kind of a thing. You might have caught that story. Everyone was, you know, it got a lot of people up in arms who had not been as concerned with right-wing extremism, but it also, like, the thing that any organization is going to do in a situation like that, and by organization I'm talking about, like, the Department of Justice and you know, specifically branches of it like the FBI, they're going to be like, well, we could have caught this if we had more power. And some of the things they've been talking about is like more ability to kind of monitor social media. There's some legal restrictions there for them. But also some of it is just like, you know, they want more money. They want the ability to go after, you know, to fund and to kind of like go after a broader swath of people. And this is always like framed as, well, we need to deal. This would have let us solve the problem that happened, that got away from us. And I think
that's
complete
bullshit.
Yeah, we
fucked up and we need more money to not fuck up.
Yeah. I published the day before the attack a list of people talking about all the things they were going to do that was like point by point all of the things that happened on the 6th. They have access to all of that information too. The problem, as a number of us were saying, is that like, well, because obviously I think that when a group of people try to force a dictatorship on the country, they should be penalized for that. I'm not against penalizing them. My
like
argument
a hearty
would be,
fine.
No, like, I don't know. You know, in ancient Rome, they had these rocks that they threw people off of when they committed treason.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm
Let's
being
throw
a little
them
bit
off of,
facetious here, but
Mount Rushmore.
Or like a slide, I'm not a fan, water slide.
Yeah. I want to be clear here because people are like, oh, you're being, you know, hypocritical because you don't, you know, you're a prison abolitionist. Yes. I'm also saying within the context of the situation that we're in, you have to use the tools as they presently exist in the system that we live under. Right.
I'm sorry. You didn't say anything about imprisoning them. You said throw them off of a rock. So
I do think we should throw some of them off of rocks, but specifically.
But point taken, yes, working within the system that we have.
Yeah, working with, and with, within the system that we have, the DOJ has the power, and these people were committing crimes that are defined crimes. They are able to prosecute these people. They are able to catch these people, and they had, I believe, the powers necessary and the funding necessary to have stopped this if they had had their shit more on the ball. They don't need anything extra. There didn't need to be more money. There didn't need to be more powers. There didn't need to be even a new plan. There needed to be a willingness to. It was always illegal to try to break
always.
Into the Capitol and murder elected leaders. You
don't
need anything
more
new.
Guidelines on that. We need to.
They just
to
need to
follow
get their
the
shit
law
together.
And
but
yeah.
Well, they could have just not opened up those.
They had a lot of options.
Let them in,
like, or that
just don't let them in.
If the Capitol Police that day had used as much force as the Portland Police used whenever someone hucked a water bottle, those people never would have gotten inside. But they didn't. And anyway, so Biden has ordered pretty much right after that a review of how federal agencies address domestic extremism, and they put out a new strategy document. And as a number of us had predicted, the document, while it does focus on some of the things we saw on the 6th and some of the right-wing stuff that people like me have been yelling about for a while, it's also clearly geared towards giving the government a lot more power to fuck with the left, who you might note didn't try to institute a dictatorship in January of this year, and hasn't been shooting up houses of worships for years and hasn't been setting off bombs in American cities for years, has in general been when they do illegal acts like fucking up windows and spray painting shit, which you might recognize as not terrorism. By my
Unless
standards,
it is now.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, they're
all going to
try to redefine terrorism, right?
When ISIS took over Mosul and spray painted graffiti on the walls,
that was
the real problem with ISIS.
Egregious crime against humanity.
Yeah, so the new strategy, the goal here is to like coordinate efforts across the government, and it outlines four priorities: improving information sharing among law enforcement agencies, which, if you remember 9/11, that was the big, one of the big things they said, like why 9/11 slipped past them is like, oh, there's not enough information sharing between agencies, right? And again, I have my ideological hat that I can put on when I talk about stuff like this and the way I think things should go. I also have my hat as somebody who is a researcher in this field, who has had interfaced with the government on this, who has sources and who has like done consultations and whatnot on this. So I'm taking that hat on now, and I'm talking about the structure of how these systems work. There's some, like, one of the reasons why information sharing across different agencies is often shitty is just very simple competition, right? These agencies are competing for funds. These agencies are, in some cases, competing for good manpower. There's a lot of, like, bad faith or bad feelings over, like, you know, which agency winds up in charge when multiple agencies are involved in a situation, right? That's why a lot of other law enforcement agencies, federal agencies even, don't really like the FBI, and why the FBI doesn't like them, especially since the FBI is also like a watch, like it is supposed to police other law enforcement agencies. So there's, it's not like, I think a lot of times people tend to look at the whole federal law enforcement apparatus as kind of one unified thing, and it's not. There's quite a lot of competition. And so it is true that they're one of the problems when you're talking about from a standpoint of how effective these agencies can be at their given tasks. One of the things that is continually a problem and was a problem in 2001 and did contribute to why 9/11 was successful is that there's shitty information sharing between them, right? There's other reasons. It's not just competition. There's reasons of like, what are you allowed to share? And like, what sort of different systems are in place for, like, there's a bunch of just sort of structural stuff, right? Like, so I'm not surprised to see that on here. There's obviously concerns because, like, what does it mean about what kind of we never really know what kind of information is being gathered about the average citizen by law enforcement, right? We all remember when, like, Snowden came out with his leaks and a bunch was revealed about what the NSA had been doing. So it's not surprising to see that on there. You should always be concerned when you hear that kind of language. I also think it is kind of a cheap excuse, because again, it's not like you needed a great deal of information sharing for the Capitol Police to know what was being planned, because I found it out. And you may notice I am not a federal law enforcement agency.
It's pretty public information.
I'm a guy with Google. Like, that's all I use to find out this stuff.
Information share with Google.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, they do.
I know.
Yeah. So the other priority was preventing recruitment by extremist groups. Again, you know, when Islamic terror was the big boogeyman, they would talk about this a lot. They're never good at it. I don't think they ever will be good at it. I don't think they're capable of being good at it, because they fundamentally don't understand in a lot of cases what recruitment means. There's still, I think, a lot of this idea that it's very direct. It's the way that you would have, like, you know, the way people tended to think it worked back right after 9/11, where you've got these centralized organizations like recruiting people to carry out centralized attacks. And that's not how a lot of domestic extremism works now. It's stochastic. You know, there are people within these agencies who do understand that. I don't think they have a lot of power, but also it's a question of I don't know how they could, with all of the resources they have. I don't know how you actually, as the FBI or whatever, could stop the kind of recruitment that exists, because how do you stop people from winding up falling down these internet rabbit holes that lead them to believe the white race is being genocided and they should shoot up a mosque, right? Like, what does prevention of that look like? No one really knows. There are theories people have.
It's an impossible task. I mean, a theory, sure, but yeah. I don't think that there's a blanket answer for one thing or another. It depends on the community. It depends on this, yeah.
And it's to be honest, again, and I'm saying we're talking right now because we're talking about how these agencies are looking at things, how the government is looking at things from a perspective of, if you believe there should be federal law enforcement, right? If you believe these organizations should exist, is there anything they can do to stop that kind of recruiting? I don't actually know that there is, because I tend to think most of the problems that lead these groups to be able to recruit, that lead to this kind of propaganda having an impact, are structural problems in our society that make people vulnerable to these kinds of messages. And no matter how much power you give the FBI, they're never going to be able to deal with that, unless you give the FBI the power to give everyone health care, which
things that need to happen. Not only do they not have the power to do that, they wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they wouldn't want to do that. I don't think they can do that. I think, yes, of course they want to prevent recruitment. I don't think, even if they understand fully, and there are individuals within these organizations who do have a good understanding of how this recruitment works, but I don't think there's anything they can do to really stop it. Then you have investigating these groups, you know, the groups doing the recruiting and confronting the longstanding drivers of domestic terrorism, racism, and bigotry. I am happy to see that put in there. It's the most direct statement you kind of see in this document, stating that the primary drivers of domestic terrorism are racism and bigotry. Now, there's some waffling later on about the what kind of racism and what kind of bigotry, which is a problem. That said, you're looking at another thing that federal law enforcement can't confront racism and bigotry as problems. Like the FBI, again, will never be able to have there not be bigotry. That's not number one, never what they've been able to do.
Also, law enforcement is full of racists and bigots.
Yes, right. It is. Including the FBI has released some of the better reports we have about the extent of white supremacist infiltration of local law enforcement, state and local law enforcement, are FBI reports. So they're very aware of the problem within law enforcement. I think they're less aware of the problem within the FBI. But also, again, you can write reports on it, which I guess is, again, it's good that there's some sort of watchdog for the police writing this shit. They don't have a great record of doing anything about it, you know? Like, they don't have a great record of actually stopping. For example, they can write a bunch of reports saying, hey, there's a shitload of white supremacists in local police. Right now, the city of Portland is in, like, contempt of federal law enforcement because they're violating federal law with all of the use of force against particularly mentally ill people and houseless people. And they're in a bunch of trouble, and the federal government has been threatening them because they have not brought up to state that, like, years ago, they were told you need to do these things, and they did none of them. And they're basically just saying, what are you going to do? Fire all of the cops in Portland? And so far, the feds have been like, I don't know what we're going to do.
Fire them.
They say these are all the things that we need to do. And I guess broadly speaking, they're not wrong. Yes, if you want to stop domestic terrorism, you prevent recruitment by extremist groups. You investigate the groups. You confront the things that drive domestic terrorism, which is racism and bigotry. I don't think federal law enforcement can do any of that. I don't think they have that power. I think even in the best case scenario, right? They just can't. It's just not they're not able to do that. They're pretty good at. I mean, they're not even great. They're not even as good as you want at, like, for example, on the 6th, somebody was placing pipe bombs outside the DNC and the RNC headquarters. They didn't catch that guy, and I'm pretty sure that guy's a Fed, former or current, because from the footage that we have, the individual knew how to dress themselves in order to not be visible. They constructed functional weapons, and more to the point, they knew exactly where the cameras were, and they made sure that they were not filmed in a way that would possibly give them away. They were very, very smart about how they did that. They have not been caught yet.
They have somebody that, I said, if they're not a Fed, they are connected to them to have that information, and there's a real, probably a purposeful reason why they have not been caught.
Yeah. Whoever that was very competent. So again, if they can't catch that, how are they going to deal with, like, structural problems in American society, you know?
Yeah, no, they can't. They won't.
So with everything I've just said, you understand why I think it's kind of silly that based on these things that federal law enforcement largely cannot possibly do in the most ideal world, the administration has requested $100 million in additional funds to hire prosecutors, investigators, and analysts. I don't think that's going to help. Maybe the analysts will, you know, having more analysts, people who are, like, you know, looking at chatter online and stuff. I don't know how fucking tapped those dudes were. I'm sure some of it has been a problem. Like, the Trump administration was very loath to have people investigating this stuff. Mm-hmm. So that is one of more of the things that might have some impact. You know, they can do some stuff there.
If you're monitoring, like, social media, there's a lot of discernment you need to know, like, okay, this person just, like, shit posting, or is, like, this a serious thing? Like, what is, and, like, being, you know, aware of all those communities.
And again, to the extent that I have in the past, like, lectured members of these, you know, organizations, that's the stuff I lecture about. It's not like techniques. I'm not saying, like, here's how you track, because I'm not good at that. I'm trying to explain, like, shitposting. I'm trying to explain, like, the way people fall down rabbit holes and get pilled, and, like,
how it works,
how stochastic terrorism works. Because that is one area where I do think it can be useful. So I'm not saying there's absolutely nothing. Again, talking about we're not going to tear down the system, right? Certainly Joe Biden is not. So is there a way the system can be made that actually might reduce the number of people who get murdered in this way? That is something that can help. Is $100 million needed? I don't know. I don't think so. I think most of this, I think there's very little that will actually be done that will have an effect.
Yeah, well, and if it does have an effect, it's probably just going to be like a curtailing of various civil liberties. And
yes,
that's where I wanted to get to, because part of this is also in these reports, in all of these plans and this shit that's coming out. There's a huge risk for organizers, protesters.
You're very right. And I think we'll get to that, because that is my primary concern. I have concerns that, like, for example, at some point, a bunch of fucking 17-year-olds breaking Starbucks windows are going to get wrapped up with terrorism charges. And stuff like that has happened before. The Green Scare was people who were like fucking up logging equipment and shit and doing what in a normal world would at most be kind of mild to moderate property destruction, getting 20-year terrorism sentences. Because the government was really scared of the green movement, you know, of people taking direct action, because the people who fund the government are scared of that. And
then you get, you know, that you start having people being surveilled and surveillance being put on citizens who are not.
Like, even like old lady who was at the Capitol riot, like you're like. Gonna, you know, go like going after people like that happen to be there, as opposed to like your example of the person who set like pipe bombs out in these places, and like where that focus goes.
We have to take a quick break, but then we'll come back and we'll keep talking about this. Sound good?
You know who will not set off pipe bombs?
Raytheon.
Well, no, they will not, because Raytheon has access to... Katie, have you heard the good news about Hexagen?
I have not.
Oh, now your standard pipe bomb you're going to be making out of probably like smokeless powder or something, right?
Sure,
basically, gunpowder makes a big boom. Hexagen, oh, Katie, Hexagen is like if the black powder in a normal pipe bomb is like a cool, like a Corona beer, Hexagen, you're talking like 151 rum. And that's what Raytheon uses. And with Hexagen, a pipe bomb you can take out the front of a school bus. Hexagen, you make sure that school bus is in the atmosphere. You know, that's the beauty of Hexagen. So, listeners, you know, do the right thing the next time you're creating illegal terrorism devices. And go with Raytheon.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb.
We're back and we're talking about domestic terrorism, my favorite kind of terrorism, absolutely the best terrorism,
I mean,
in my opinion, you know?
International terrorism is so...
Such a bummer. Real drag.
2001.
Mm-hmm. I know. Mm-hmm. And kind of gauche, right? Yeah, a little bit out of season, right? Nobody's doing international terrorism anymore. We're all going domestic, baby.
I think that the term that the internet influencers are using is chuggy.
It's chuggy.
Yeah. Chuggy. I mean, it's one of those things, Cody, you know, we're all more concerned about the climate these days, right? We're shopping local. We're using local farms to get our produce. And our terrorism should be local, too, you know?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's keep just better local. For everybody. Yeah, keep it local. Keep it local.
Local.
Shop local, bomb shop local. Terrorists. Oh, Jesus. Yep. Okay. we may have run afoul of the new terrorism guidelines here.
Bleep a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, one of the things that concerns me most about this is that $77 million through a Homeland Security grant program is going to state and local partners to protect against and respond to domestic violent extremism. This is potentially a significant issue because they really go out of their way to both sides every terrorism thing. So they talk about the threat of pro-life extremists who murder a significant number of people and who regularly carry out lethal attacks. And then also mention pro-choice extremists as being a problem, which you may recognize as not a thing.
Never heard of it.
There's ever been a pro-choice terrorist attack.
Oh, I just love the fine people on both sides and the bad people on both sides.
Yeah,
well, it's
and
quite
they're
something
also,
to see. Like far right terrorism, and then go to the people who oppose those people.
Uh huh.
And who are actively resisting that
people? Yes.
Maybe these organizations should just fund Antifa and
Antifa take over.
Yeah.
So one of the things that's a concern to me, one of the things that's good about this, if I'm going to be fair, is that at multiple points it talks about, it makes it very clear that that white supremacists are the primary threat. There's a line, specifically pose an elevated threat to our country in 2021 with racially and or ethnically motivated violent extremists, and specifically those who espouse the superiority of the white race and anti-government militia violent extremists posing the most lethal threat. Pretty good line. Pretty reasonable statement. There's another that says their insistence on violence can at times be explicit, it can at times be less explicit, lurking in ideologies rooted in a perception of the superiority of the white race that call for violence and furtherance of perverse and abhorrent notions of racial purity or cleansing. But then it goes right down to saying that a key component of the threat comes from anti-government or anti-authority violent extremists. This significant component of today's
anti-authority,
militias. Yeah, that's so they're looping in militias, which have carried out a couple of different terrorist attacks last year. The militia movement brought us the Oklahoma City bombing, and they're looping.
But also
that
militia,
in.
Like militias, are specifically named in the Constitution. Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, and you do also like that is also a concern, right? Like it is one of those things. I'm going to guess most, particularly liberals, think that militia should be illegal, but it's always a concern. And I think people don't like you have a right to be in a militia. Which is not like, again, a lot of my work has been dealing with the militia movement because it's a problem. But like you have a constitutional right to be in a militia. That's there's no legal argument.
It says it right there.
It's right there.
Yeah,
it's
very clear.
Our right to our guns.
Yeah, it's one of the few words in that.
Yeah.
I mean, a well-regulated militia, but.
Yeah. Yes, of course. There is debate about like how that. But you do have a right to be in a militia. You don't have a right to attempt to kidnap the governor of Minnesota. That
also,
is not in the Constitution.
I'm just going to throw this out. That the birth of this nation was allegedly explicitly anti-authoritarian.
Yeah. And that's what concerns me, because immediately after they talk about militias, they talk about. Anarchist violent extremists who violently oppose all forms of capitalism, corporate globalization, and government institutions, which they perceive as harmful to society. And that is listed as a threat right above sovereign citizen violent extremists who have killed more cops than any other group of extremists. And in fact, repeatedly, when police themselves are questioned over who scares them most, sovereign citizens always top the list. Because they, especially during traffic stop, they shoot a fuckload of cops. It happens a bunch. You may notice no anarchist, like Portland, we've had a lot of people throw shit at cops. We've had even a couple of Molotovs. Not a single Portland police officer has been killed or severely injured. Because for whatever criticisms you want to make of the anarchist movement here, they don't want to murder people. Whereas like four cops were killed by Boogaloo types last year. Yeah.
It's important to always be skeptical of this kind of thing in general, and giving any of these organizations more power and validation. The shift over the past like 4 years or so of after Trump of being like, we fucking love the FBI now, we fucking love the FBI, the CIA, fucking shower me with whatever. Yeah. That's an issue, but then like to see it like they're just like explicitly being like, well, yeah, no, we're just going after everybody. Anybody who has like capitalism or authority, like all these kind of stuff.
It's just, you know, permission to crack down on anything and everything. Yeah.
It's a mix. Yeah. I think what it is it's at the highest level, it's cravenness and a desire not to be seen as playing sides and not to make the right wing angry. And at the level of implementation, what that means is it's created a justification to crack down on the left. That's what I think we're seeing.
Charge.
Here. Yeah, but to an extent it doesn't, because $77 right. million dollars of this funding is going to local programs to combat violent extremism, and all of that effort's going to be focused on the left. They don't give a shit about the Proud Boys, you know?
Of course.
I've watched it. And that is concerning. One of the good things here is that they list involuntary celibate violent extremism as a problem. as a lethal problem, which it absolutely is, one of the biggest drivers of deadly domestic terrorism attacks in recent past. The problem with that is that they list it alongside other domestic terrorists motivated by violence, like other single issue ideologies, which they list abortion, which if they're saying pro-life, yes, that is an equivalent threat. They also list animal rights and environmental single issue extremists, which don't murder people. Certainly not in nearly, there have been, I think, maybe a couple of accidental injuries and deaths, but like but not nearly the same thing.
Yeah. It's not like, you know, environmental activists are planting bombs
driving
outside of
buses
buildings.
Into crowds. Yeah.
Yeah. You
exactly.
Know, I'm sure that you're like, maybe something accidental has happened, but yeah, that's not the ideology of how to affect change from that group.
Concerned that the Sunrise Movement will start bombing people. That's what I...
You got to keep an eye on the Sunrise Movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, kind of right alongside this big high-level government report, the Foundations for Defense of Democracies report released two dueling reports on domestic extremism, one of them on the far right and white supremacists, and one titled Behind the Black Bloc on anti-fascists and anarchists. Now, the FDD is a shit organization. They're a right-wing think tank. What's funny about this is they cite my research pretty extensively in the report,
and
on,
they call it Behind the Black Bloc.
No. In their report on white supremacists, they cite a significant amount of my work and some other people at Bellingcat's work. Their report on Behind the Black Bloc is just, it's complete fucking nonsense. For one thing, at one point in this report, they talk about how online ideologies, right, and like kind of the expressions of violence that people make before doing a physical attack can lead to physical violence. And their two examples of that are the Christchurch shooting, right, which is a fine example of like ideology and rhetoric leading someone to carry out a fatal attack. They equivocate that to a guy breaking windows on a police car. They mention them in the same pair as two examples of the same thing. And you may notice a window is not 50 people being shot to death. I would call that ridiculous and even blatantly offensive. The report includes as examples of left-wing terrorism an arson attack on a police station in Portland. I was physically there. I watched that quote-unquote attack go down. And what happened was somebody dragged a trash can fire and shoved it against the plywood of a beauty salon that was attached to a police station. And then 30 members of the crowd put the fire out. I wouldn't call it an arson attack. I guess you could you can argue, and one person has gotten convicted of arson for that, but what actually happened was the crowd stopped the fire. And furthermore, no significant damage was done. No lives were ever threatened. It is interesting, as our researcher Garrison points out, that they do not mention the Third Precinct in Minneapolis being burnt down, possibly because they know that most Americans can think that that was a more or less righteous attack and utterly justified, and they know it makes them look bad.
That is weird, right?
Because all that happened at that Portland attack was literally some plywood got charred. Like, literally some plywood got charred. That's the extent of the damage. Whereas the Third Precinct is gone.
Yeah, weird but not weird. Yes. Weird but not weird.
It's pretty blatant. Yeah.
Did you guys see this new piece from Ken Klippenstein on The Intercept?
Kenny Clips. Yeah.
U.S. military training documents say socialists represent terrorist ideology. Basically, there was a section in the training document called study questions. And the question was, anarchists, socialists, and neo-Nazis represent which terrorist ideological category? The answer was political terrorists. I would say none, and then political maybe.
You would fail. I guess I would fail that.
Shocking and frustrating thing to come out at the same time. Not shocking.
Yeah. You know what I hate about the terrorist organization, Democratic Socialists of America, when they stop people with busted taillights and replace those busted taillights for people so that they don't get pulled over.
Fuck those socialists.
And all their mutual aid they do and helping the homeless camps not get sweeped by police in L.A. And anyway, I agree. It's a terrorism.
In the mix. It's just that's how we're training people. That's how we're indoctrinating you know, people.
Yeah, no, it's this is it's so disgusting, actually, to like even mention those two things like together with neo-Nazis.
Mm-hmm. You know, and another thing that a point that Ken makes in this document is that, you know, during the Trump administration, you know, Democrats expressed a lot of concern, you know, that national security was targeting groups on the left. But all of those concerns and all of that conversation has kind of gone away. You know, the media stopped covering it from that angle. That pressure is coming off now that Biden is in office.
Mm-hmm.
And that angle, conveniently at a time when all of this stuff was coming forward. I don't know. Bothers me.
Yeah, it's not great. A lot of real bad signs. One cool thing that happened recently, because I do want to end this section on a cool thing, is in Portland, the mayor and police just announced that they're no longer going to pull people over for minor traffic infractions.
Awesome.
And they're going to reduce the circumstances under which they can search cars, specifically in order to not fuck with black people as much. Like that was the stated reason why they're doing it, because they recognize that those kind of searches unfairly impact that segment of the population.
So I guess the terrorist organization, like, the DSA, doesn't need to do the taillight thing anymore.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, we'll see how it actually works in implementation, but it is one of those things. I was hugely surprised to hear it. And if it's the thing, like if I was going to be asked, like, what was the number one change I could make that isn't taking away their guns to make cops less dangerous, this would be it, is reducing. Because really, most of what you could do if you're going to have cops to make them safer is reduce the amount of interactions they have with the public.
Yes.
And nothing does that more than stopping.
And countless stories of people losing their lives or being unfairly incarcerated over
so
being pulled over. Yep. Or, you know, cops profiling and using some traffic as an excuse to fuck shit up.
Exactly.
And, you know, like, I don't get a car freshener hanging from your rearview mirror, for example. Anywho, that is a positive note to end this on. And I guess the episode, because I'm looking at it and we're kind of out of time here.
Mm-hmm.
What else
do you think the Congress is going to pass the For the People Act?
No.
I don't think anything is going to be done to protect voting rights.
I don't think anything's going to be done at all. And then we'll lose the midterms. Fun!
Funny. It's going to be rad. I don't know. Should we talk about the fucking New York City mayoral race for a little bit?
Sure, it's happening.
Boy, Yang has really... I'm feeling bad that we were at one point optimistic about Yang being a positive force for political discussion.
He's biffed it.
Because boy howdy, he has not been.
He really has not been.
He's not going to win.
I mean, who knows? Well, they're doing ranked choice voting, right?
They're doing ranked choice voting. That's exciting. That's the first time that they've been doing that. So we will see how that works out. But apparently from a lot of, I don't have it in front of me, but the polling and the data suggests that a lot of people, particularly minority groups, have expressed a desire to not choose multiple options and to just go with their pick. So we'll see. We'll see actually how this works out in implementation. But it is a bit of a toss-up right now.
I mean, there are no good mayors ever.
I mean, sometimes towns elect dogs to be the mayor. And
that's
true.
Yeah.
I think actually that should be the only kind of mayor. If all of our mayors were dogs, I would not have problems with any of the mayors.
I visited a place that had a cat mayor. So,
In Idlewild, California, they've got a dog mayor.
See, these are all good. These are all good ideas for mayors.
Yeah, I'm not too thrilled with anybody in the race, except for, I guess, Maya Wiley, but she doesn't have, you know, she's better than the others. She also has not come out as pro defund the police, but she has committed to taking a lot of money away from the NYPD. But
well, apparently we already did that, and that's why crime is up.
Yeah, that's why crime is up everywhere, not just in New York. But it's all based in New York, you know?
Mm-hmm, of course.
And, yeah, but yeah, the race is between Andrew Yang, Eric Adams, and Catherine Garcia for the most part. And they're all, you know, Yang would and Catherine would call themselves Democrats, but they're a bit more centrist. And Eric
Well, Yang
Adams,
would also call himself a New Yorker, right? I don't know about that.
Ayo. Yeah, but it's sounding like people are kind of rallying around. Like, Eric Adams might be the strong choice, but he's problematic. But we'll see.
He's
see what
a wild
happens.
One.
He's a wild one?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Interesting because he's kind of gang. So Yang and Catherine have started campaigning together as a strategy for the ranked choice voting, you know? And Eric Adams has come out, accused them of, you know, not wanting to have a black mayor, but, you know, being anti-minorities. But Andrew Yang is Asian. Anyway, it's all a mess. We'll see.
Yeah,
there's a better way to end this section. I just am not thrilled with any of these candidates.
We could end on some. I mean, Eric Adams is not. Yeah, you know, vote for whoever you want. Do what you got to do. he plans on retiring. When he retires, he plans on moving to the Golan Heights.
Okay.
Which is
great.
Interesting. When cool. asked, here's a fun little quote that I'm just going to read. He's asked about the best concert he's ever been to. Curtis Mayfield at the Wingate Concert Series. At that concert, there was a rainstorm, and the lights fell on Curtis Mayfield, and they actually paralyzed him at that concert.
What?
He died a few years ago, but it was an amazing concert before that happened. Just so unfortunate.
What the fuck?
His favorite concert was when...
Oh,
wow.
Man. Yeah, that's literally like the joke about how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln. Like,
yes, it is. It is just
up
that.
Until that guy's died,
until,
it was rad.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Adams is, you know... former police chief commissioner, has said several problematic things in the past during his time in the public, you know, racially insensitive things. So we'll see what happens. And he's a Republican, which is also, you know, it's wild that he's got such a strong leg to stand on in this race when everyone talks about how liberal New York City is.
Mm.
So those are some things.
Yeah, the left is not doing great in New York right now.
We'll see what happens in the next couple days.
Well, they defunded the police and then crime went up.
Yep.
Like, I mean, what are you going to get? You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
All right. I think that does it for us today.
Yeah, that's going to do it for us here at the worst year ever. You know, in the next week, I suggest each of you go out and, you know, buy some Hexagen. Just start buying Hexagen. Get as much of it as you can. Put it under your in your attic, in your basement.
We are 100% on these lists, aren't we?
Wherever you keep a lot of dry wood, too. You know, really, if you don't have Hexagen, get a lot of oil-soaked rags and dry wood. Keep that around the edges of your ceiling. You know, make sure you block windows with it. Good stuff. Just be safe.
All right, guys. See you next week.
Everything's so dumb. Everything's so dumb, and it's gonna get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.